This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
And now we enlighten you with Ayah 260 to 263 of Surah Baqarah, recited by Shahriyar Parhizgar.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. وَإِذْ قَالَ إِبْرَاهِيمُ رَبِّ أَرِنِي كَيْفَ تُحْيِي الْمَوْتَى قَالَ أَوَلَمْ تُؤْمِنْ قَالَ بَلَى وَلَكِنْ لِيَطْمَئِنَّ قَلْبِي قال فخذ أربعة من الطير فصرهن إليك ثم اجعل على كل جبل منهن جزءا ثم ادعهن يأتينك سعيا واعلم أن الله عزيز حكيم مثل الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة 100 حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله ثم لا يتبعون ما أنفقوا منا ولا أذى لهم أجرهم عند ربهم ولا خوف عليهم ولا هم يحزنون قول معروف ومغفرة خير من صدقة يتبعها أذى والله غني حليم.
In the name of Allah, and when Abraham said, My Lord, show me how you revive the dead. He said, Do you not believe? He said, Yes, indeed, but in order that my heart may be at rest. He said, Take 4 of the birds, then cut them into pieces, and place a part of them on every mountain. Then call them, they will come to you, hastening, and know that Allah is Almighty and All-Wise. Those who spend their wealth in the way of Allah and then do not follow what they have spent with reproaches and affronts, they shall have their reward near their Lord, and they will have no fear, nor will they grieve. An honorable word with pardon is better than a charity followed by affront, and Allah is all-sufficient, most forbearing.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, FM, and satellites. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Doing us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Welcome, everyone. The Zionist occupation entity, headquartered in Tel Aviv, has resumed its genocide on Gaza. 15.5 months of Palestinian civilian massacres, entire families, generations erased forever, was not enough. Leveling over 70% of all the structures in the besieged strip into piles of rubble was not enough either. Nearly 50,000 Palestinians killed, over 112,000 wounded, and those living, sick, cold, hungry, and homeless, was not enough for the American and Israeli appetite, because January 19th marked a chance to stop it all, a chance the Palestinians accepted and respected, and a chance that the occupation violated and ended. Now, Tel Aviv is offering to negotiate a new ceasefire deal as it slaughters nearly 1,000 Palestinians in 48 hours. This is a topic of today's Spotlight program. And now for our guests. Joining us is Laith Maruf, Executive Director of Free Palestine TV, joining us from Beirut. And Eve Engler, author and political activist, joining us from Montreal, Canada. Gentlemen, I'd like to welcome you both to the program. I guess we'll start there, Laith, with you in Beirut. Genocide that the world, Laith, was shocked to live through for nearly 16 months, protested and condemned globally, has resumed. And why, Laith? Why, when there's a functioning ceasefire, are we here again?
We're here again because the West has coddled Israel, has protected it from any price to pay for the genocide that it conducted, and because it's now been resupplied with all the weapons, and it has an unending financial aid from the West to continue this genocide. Since they were not held responsible, and nobody stopped them. Clearly, the Zionists believe that they can continue this and that they will pay no price for that. And it seems like up until now, nobody has the power to stop them or is willing to end their the protection by the West.
Thank you. And Eves, welcome to the Spotlight program. Hope you're safe and doing well out there in Montreal. Now, Eves, the prime minister of the occupation, says he ordered the strikes after a lack of progress on ceasefire negotiations for an extension. So let's break down, Eves, how misleading this statement is by Benjamin Netanyahu. Now, the extension was, you know very well, unilaterally demanded by the White House and Tel Aviv, a violation, in fact, of the initial ceasefire that was moving, functioning, and working for all sides.
The ceasefire from the get-go, I mean, they killed, I think it's a couple hundred Palestinians they killed in Gaza over the past 2 months of official ceasefire. And of course, they refused to engage in the negotiations to move this second phase along. You know, Netanyahu didn't want this from the get-go. It was kind of imposed by Trump, because I think Trump wanted it for his own inauguration reasons. And then we just had the advisor there, Buhler, about a week ago, that's trying to get this agreement kind of back on track, and specifically trying to get this U.S. dual U.S. citizen captive out. And he said that basically that the U.S. wasn't an agent of Israel, and that Hamas didn't have horns coming out of their heads on the CNN interview. And they were negotiating and trying to figure this out. And the Israel lobby got him taken out as that position within the Trump administration. And then obviously we have what the U.S., the bombings, the U.S. in Yemen, which I think was a prelude to providing the Israel cover to restart this slaughter campaign. And now they seem to have gone in, they divided, they have the Netzim corridor again. Apparently Israel's just in the last hours has taken that, and they're going to they killed even a UN worker today, and they killed a couple hundred children, and they're going to go right back to their, I think they're going to try to go back to their maximalist aim, which is the ethnic cleansing, the driving out of all Palestinians from Gaza. I don't think they're going to be successful in this, but I think that's been the aim for 17 months here, and years ago back. This is the aim of Zionism going back 100 plus years. It's remarkable to see this, and the Canadian government's statement, the foreign minister's statement, is sort of like there's two sides here, when obviously it's Israel that's violated the agreement. Obviously it's Israel that's just killed 200 children. Obviously it's Israel that just killed a UN worker. Obviously it's Israel that's destroyed all of much or most of Gaza. It's just stunning to watch.
And I was going to actually get into this later in our discussion, but Laith, since Eves brought it up, let's talk about self-proclaimed anti-war Donald Trump here, who basically as candidate pushed for, he said he wants to have no Gaza war under his watch taking place. He pushed for it. It was implemented on January 19th. You know, the U.S. president's coming to office on January 20th, 24 hours before he comes into office. He comes into office when there's a ceasefire basically in place. So why is he now, from your perspective, such a big part of the reneging of this ceasefire that was functioning?
Well, we watched the interview with Trump yesterday on CNN when he said Islam hates us, and basically saying Muslims are the enemies of the West. And it's a repetition of the position of Netanyahu that the Zionist colony is the protection bulwark for the Western empires. And so truthfully, Trump was from the beginning trying to end the war in Ukraine so the empire can redirect its military machinery and its finances towards protecting the Zionist colony, which is the most important asset and the jewel in the imperialist crown. We had the meeting between Trump and Putin on the phone, the presidential meeting between the two presidents yesterday, and we saw the statement coming out from the White House saying that Putin and Biden and Trump have agreed not to allow Iran to ever outpace Israel militarily or be in a position to destroy Israel. We also, that shows you clearly that the United States will do anything for that. This is more important to the United States than Ukraine, their meaning of the Zionist colony, because as we see, the Zionists are destroying all the Arabic countries around them. They're destabilizing all these countries, making it easy to extract all oil and gas and resources of the whole region, and to destroy the presence of Arabic Jews, Christian Arabs, and diversity, and to make the West able to lie to the world to say that they represent Christianity, the religion that was birthed in Palestine, and or that they represent Judaism, the religion that was born in Egypt. So there's a bigger picture here, and I don't think Trump will stop the war or the genocide in Gaza, and I think he will be expanding this war, as we saw, to Yemen and most likely to Iran very soon.
Hmm. And Yves, your thoughts on how Israel, its approach now, it expects to kill and maim Palestinians while demanding that the resistance sits down and negotiates a new deal. And if you could also touch on the fact that it was the U.S. who proposed the existing agreement, all sides agreed to it, and you mentioned earlier the Israelis didn't like it too much and felt like it was kind of shoved down their throat, but nevertheless, it was in the process of implementation. And why is the U.S. now part of the process that is allowing and supporting the ceasefire's destruction?
Yeah, I mean, I think that I think Netanyahu does have some electoralist objectives here. There's a controversy going on over the attorney general, him firing the attorney general in Israel, and there's dissent. You know, within Israeli Jewish society, there's lots of disagreement with Netanyahu on all kinds of internal issues, and significant disagreement, opposition, and he tries to unite Israeli Jewish public in terms of, you know, killing and maiming and imposing suffering on Palestinians. There's also, but counter to that, of course, is that there is a Israeli Jewish desire to, you know, get the captives, their soldiers in Gaza out, and Netanyahu, of course, by relaunching this, is making that that unlikely. Probably now fewer and fewer of them are ever gonna leave. So there's some of that dynamic. But I think that the U.S. has enabled this all along. The U.S. doesn't, it's not just on Palestine and Gaza. The U.S. is fine with killing people, particularly non-white people, particularly in the global south, all over the world. Of course, there's a long history of that. I don't think that there's many people in Washington, Republican, Democrat, or whatever, that have too much concern about Palestinians being killed. There are, I think, some strategic questions in terms of the other regimes in the region, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, particularly, whether they're willing to go along with these real maximalist aims of the Zionist movement. And of course, Trump has echoed some of those aims, where he talked about Gaza being the Riviera and all that stuff that he's raised. He's obviously a exceedingly anti-Palestinian. He referred to Chuck Schumer again just a couple of days ago, the slur that Chuck Schumer, who is a staunch Zionist Democrat, that he's a Palestinian. That's Trump repeatedly referred to Schumer as a Palestinian, as if that's a slur against Schumer. He doesn't value Palestinian life at all. Now, does the U.S. empire benefit from just kind of endless killing in Gaza and the sort of credibility hit and the public relations hit that it takes. I think there are some questions there in terms of that being a problem in some ways for the U.S. But simultaneously, of course, they like the fact that Israel dominates the region and, you know, just takes more Syrian land and, you know, destroys Lebanon and Hezbollah and may well attack Iran. So there's some sort of tensions within all that. But yeah, I mean, the U.S. has never been, U.S. wants a ceasefire, if they want some sort of not justice for Palestinians, but even some sort of like modicum of ending the horrors, they can impose it. We've seen them 2 months ago. We saw they can impose it. They're choosing not to impose it because they don't really care. The arms companies in the U.S. like shipping, you know, all these 2,000 pound bombs that they've just shipped billions and billions more in recent months. So you put that all together, and Netanyahu and the Israeli government are going to, you know, kill who knows how many more in Gaza.
Thank you, Yves. And Laith, I'd like you to comment on what Yves just said. Do you, and we've heard this a lot, do you attribute to the resumption of this genocide to Netanyahu's political survival? And if that's the case, if, like many other Zionist leaders, he needs to have a death, destruction, and displacement of Palestinians on the plate for to quench his appetite and appease his supporters. He has this vicious campaign unfolding in the occupied West Bank where all those ingredients are involved: death, displacement, destruction, demolition. Why does he have to resume the onslaught on Gaza? Why can't he leave them alone and let them rebuild?
Well, obviously, Netanyahu accepted the ceasefire agreement because Trump told him to, and Trump wanted that win for his inauguration. And that led to the resignation of Ben-Gvir, the Minister of Internal Security. We saw today or yesterday the reappointment of Ben-Gvir back into the cabinet because of the resumption of the genocide in Gaza. But I want to caution about putting too much weight into the issue of Netanyahu's political career and maneuvering inside Israel, because no matter what Israeli leader comes in, what Zionist comes in, they're all bloodthirsty Jewish white supremacists that want to kill and or expel the Palestinians completely from their homeland. And, you know, I think the resumption of the genocide is happening right now because Trump proposed the expulsion of the people of Gaza in order to empty it from the Palestinians so Israel can take it over. And the local vassals of the United States that would have had to take in those refugees, meaning Egypt and Jordan, refused this option. So in order for Israel to continue existing as a Jewish supremacist colony, it has only two choices: either to expel the Palestinian inhabitants completely or make them a very, very small minority that doesn't matter demographically, and or to kill them, most of them, again, to cull their numbers. And since the option that Trump offered, the expulsion, is off the table now, then the Israelis are back to Plan A, which is the genocide of the Palestinian people. And nothing's going to stop this genocide except military force. The Israelis have to be defeated. The United States has to be defeated. The West has to pay a price so heavy that it cannot afford anymore to supply the Zionist colony with never-ending weapons and financial aid for the Zionist colony to collapse. And up until now, unfortunately, the axis of resistance hasn't been able to deliver on this formula. Neither the United States has been made to pay a price for its support, or the West for the support of the Zionist colony, nor was the defeat of the Zionist colony militarily delivered on.
And Yves, okay, so there's three phases of the January 19th Gaza ceasefire deal. Phase one ended in early March. Now both sides, they finished phase one. The occupation got 33 of its captives back as planned on time. And we're supposed to enter now talks for a second phase, which was going to require the occupation at some point withdrawing from Gaza, getting more of its captives back, and inking a permanent end to this genocide once and for all. I want to, from your perspective, what part of the deal do you think the Israelis didn't like, and why that they are now unilaterally demanding a new ceasefire arrangement?
They didn't like the part that said they're not supposed to kill more Palestinians, whatever they want to kill more Palestinians. Mm. I mean, that's the essence of it. And obviously, the fact that they haven't defeated Hamas, I think that is a real the Israeli government and Israeli society, or much of Israeli society, that's very threatening. That they've, you know, 17 months of onslaught, and they haven't been able to defeat Hamas, which was part of the stated objectives, whether that was actually their main objective, but it was part of their stated objectives. And the fact that they weren't able to get the Israeli captives back in a military way. I think that that wasn't ever their main objective, of course. We know that because they were prepared to kill Israeli captives, and they did lots of that on October 7th and afterwards. But they did want to be able to, you know, do it in a military form, i.e. that they, you know, not in negotiations, that they are the all-powerful. So that I think is part of it. And if you look at it from any sort of like just sort of stability standpoint, it doesn't really make sense from Israeli perspective, because, you know, get the captives back, continue a ceasefire, and let Palestinians deal with the years and years of, you know, rebuilding. I mean, just take years and years just to get rid of the rubble and all the different contaminants and the, you know, endless stream of difficulties that Palestinians are going to have in Gaza, even under, even without bombs being dropped on their heads. But that's not, I mean, I don't think Zionism hasn't been about stability, really. If you look at it, it's about expansion. And that's where I think it's so important, of course, the weaponry coming from the U.S. and all that kind of the assistance is that even some of the elements within Zionism that maybe are a bit more cautious, when you have the U.S. empire and other NATO Western countries providing all this sort of support, you're basically egging on the most aggressive parts of the Zionist movement. And of course, that I think is the kind of the big picture explanation for why we see in the last 24 or 48 hours, 500 plus Palestinians slaughtered.
Yeah, about 900 plus in the last 48 hours. It's very disheartening, but an average of 500 a day, to your point. Laith, same question to you. Why do you think the regime is avoiding the second phase, where a serious part of its withdrawal and a permanent end to this genocide was to be agreed? Why demand an extra 52-day extension by the White House and Netanyahu for the first phase, where you get all your captives back, give no concessions to the Palestinians, and you know the Palestinians are not going to accept that because they get nothing but empty promises, and you very well know where they can go with that?
Oh, yeah. So definitely the most important part of the ceasefire first phase for the Israelis was getting their supplies of weapons refilled. They had run out of most of their heavy bombs. It's a nonstop bombardment of Lebanon and Palestine and Syria and Yemen for 16 months. They ran out of all their caches. So we saw in the first 2 months of Trump's presidency, him sending almost every week huge amounts of weapons just so they can refill up. And now that they have everything on the ground, they are ready to commence the genocide. Remember, during the actual war, Israel did have shortages of air defense missiles. It had started to have shortages of tank shells and these bunker buster bombs. in the last months of the war because of the beginnings of boycott movements in some countries like Spain that were, you know, touching on the supply chain of weapons that's going to the Zionists, and the blockade that the Yemeni resistance and military conducted on the Red Sea shipping. Now they are back, they're full, all their caches, and they're ready to genocide more Palestinians, more Arabs, more Muslims in the region. And the United States is fully behind them on this project.
Okay, you know, we barely have any time, but I really want to get this last question out to one of you. Eves, I'm going to ask you this, and if you can, try to keep it under a minute. Former Israeli National Security Minister Itamar Ben-Gvir, who left the government over disagreements over that ceasefire, the January 19th, is to rejoin the coalition of Benjamin Netanyahu's government there. What does this tell us about the prospects of a ceasefire getting put back in place?
Not good. I mean, he's absolutely aggressively on record that he wants all Palestinians driven out, and he wants to keep going until that happens.
All right, gentlemen, thank you both for joining us on the program. Stay safe to both of you. Mr. Laith Maarouf there joining us, executive director from Free Palestine TV, joining us out of Beirut, Lebanon, and Eves Engler, author and political activist, joining us from Montreal, Canada. This brings us to the end of your Spotlight program. Thank you for joining us, and bye-bye for now.
Imam Sajjad, peace be upon him, has said, "Whenever I remember the martyrdom of the children of Fatima, peace be upon her, my eyes filled with tears."
Muhammad is my guide, Muhammad is my teacher, Muhammad my beloved Rasulullah.
I want to be like you.
Like you.
In everything I do, Ya Rasulullah.
I want to walk like you, talk like you, read my Quran just like you.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum to all of you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Welcome to another episode of Like Muhammad Sallallahu Alaihi Wa Alaihi Wasallam. Well, cherished listeners, you are tuned into the program named after the great prophet, the space which is dedicated to exploring the legacy of our prophet Muhammad. And as we delve into his noble character and exemplary teachings, let us open our hearts to the wisdom that continue to guide us in our daily lives.
النبي صلوا عليه صلوات الله عليه كلكم قولوا سوا صلوات الله عليه
النبي صلوا عليه صلوات الله عليه
Well, this is Nahid having the honor of hosting you on another episode. And today, we are going to talk about the habits of the Prophet, which science later proved. Well, first of all, what we are going to talk about are the daily routines and the simple habits that our great Prophet, peace be upon him and his great family, had, and the way that science later could get in touch with those habits and could prove them to be true. Well, Islam's holistic approach to life and thus health offers us the ability to remain strong and healthy. If God decrees that illness or injury are to be part of our lives, then Islam provides us with the ways and means of accepting and even being grateful for the tests and trials that envelop us. Believers in Islam must take care of their spiritual, emotional, and physical health. God gave us our bodies, the most complex of machines, as a trust. We should not abuse or neglect them. Well, diet and nutrition played a big part in the life of our great Prophet, which we are going to focus today. And in the other cases in our lives also, diet and nutrition are the important parts. Islam lays emphasis on a simple diet combined with physical exercise, fulfilling the obligations of three of the five pillars of Islam, requires that Muslims be of sound health and fitness. The daily performance of five prayers is in itself a form of exercise. It and its prescribed movements involve all the muscles and joints of the body, and the concentration in the prayer relieves mental stress. The practice of eating less to prevent sickness and disease was emphasized by Prophet Muhammad, and now backed heavily by science much later. The Islamic concept that our great Prophet has just mentioned is that we need to fulfill after having one-third of the food in our body, one-third of the space for liquid, and one-third for our breath. The other fact is eating slowly. We now know that it takes our body 20 minutes to send signals to our brain that it is full. Slow eating will help you eat less food and improve your digestion. And it is a practice Prophet Muhammad did himself and strongly advocated. The other habit that our great Prophet had was mindful eating. Eat together and not separately. For the blessing is associated with the company. The Prophet stressed this, and today sharing and enjoying food has been proven to reduce stress and build healthy eating habits within family and children. Since in Islam we had sofra, the tablecloth that we used to spread and have food on it, so the different people of the family would sit next to each other and eat. This habit, which is rooted in the Islamic culture, was what our Prophet had also mentioned and rooted it for us in our religion. Next is water. Do not drink water in one breath, but drink it by two or three breaths. This is the manner by which Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam drank water. Science today proves that when a person drinks too much water in a short period of time, they can experience headaches, imbalance in blood electrolyte levels, and sometimes dizziness too. Drinking slowly helps you actually absorb the fluid and get the most benefit of it. Welcome back to Like Muhammad, where today we are going to talk about the habits of our great Prophet, which have been proven by science. Well, the next habit of our Prophet was fasting, the thing that we can see these days in the holy month of Ramadan, that all people are going for the tradition and culture of Islam, namely after the great noble character and the role model of Islam, Prophet Muhammad, is this habit of fasting. Recent evidence is showing that not just the food we eat, but our eating timing and patterns also have a profound impact on our health. Fasting was a regular practice of Prophet Muhammad's life as well. not just during Ramadan. He would fast until Maghrib and also on the 13th, 14th, and 15th of each month. And also we have many narrations from him in which he also recommends his followers to fast during these days. This is similar to the fasting practices that are going to be widespread these days as well. Well, regarding the next habit of our great prophet, we can name dates. We all know that our great imams, alayhim wasalam, and our prophet, the most noble character of Islam, they used to love dates. Dates were the perfect food that they used to eat most of the time. And Prophet Muhammad also said, a family which has dates will not be hungry. And dates are now proven to boost the production in our body and speed up the energy that we need for our life. So dates are the perfect food to break our fast. They are the best things to start eating with, and the best thing that our Prophet used to also consume and recommend to us as well. Well, the next feature and habit of our great Prophet was staying active. Fulfilling three of the five pillars of Islam requires that Muslims be of sound health and fitness, as we mentioned. Prayer in itself is a form of exercise that requires the movement of our body, and we all know it. And good health is also necessary if you intend to fast or participate in Hajj. Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam had said, "A strong believer was better than a weak believer." He was talking in terms of faith and character, but also indicating that physical strength, the optimum health and fitness were desirable, providing that God gave us the ways and the means of attaining this strength. The next feature, which is one of the greatest and most mesmerizing features of our great prophet, is the fitness of him. Prophet Muhammad advised his followers to work, to be energetic, and to start their day early, all of which are conditions for a healthy body. He said, "O God, make the early morning hours blessed for my nation." Obesity or an inadequate diet, laziness and weakness are all afflictions for which we will be called to account. Even though preventing illness or injuries often out of our control, there are many conditions brought on or made worse by our own lack of attention to diet and fitness. Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him and his family, had said, "Any action without the remembrance of God is either a diversion or heedlessness, excepting four acts: walking from target to target during the archery practice, training a horse, playing with one's family, and learning to swim." So the benefits of these activities are regardless of the activities that have been mentioned, and the way our Prophet also used to go for the same as a greatest sample we can use. Well, with the remembrance of all the habits that our great Prophet had, that science is proving them right now, and with the fact that whatever he had recommended us and the way that he has paved the way for every second and every moment of our life, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Be like Muhammad, live like Muhammad, see like Muhammad did. Be like Muhammad and live like Muhammad and give like Muhammad gave. Shafi'ullah, Habibullah, Nabiullah, Rasulullah, Khalilullah, the friend of Allah, Ya Rasulullah, Rasulullah.
Take pieces of bread from me, and your soul will never be broken. And if I am your haven, you will never be homeless. One whose cloak is me will never be naked. And one whose resort is me will never be destitute. God is above all powers. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
During the 1948 war, Zionist regime forces committed more than 30 documented massacres in Palestine. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more. Palestine Chronicle wrote, "It is important to know the origins of the Israeli lobby to realize the significant sway it has had on American politics and the politicians. For that, we have to go back in time to post-World War II history to begin to correct the injustices that generations of Palestinians have faced and to become a society that can live with its conscience. The story of Palestine and its people must be told." After the Second World War, the United States made the decision to tie its destiny to the ethno-nationalist settler colonial regime of Israel. And since then, the Palestinian people have stood alone in their struggle. The establishment of the fabricated regime of Israel was a violent process that has never ended. Beginning in 1947, Zionist paramilitary forces launched large-scale attacks on Palestinian towns and villages, leading ultimately to the Nakba, the catastrophe, the culminating stage of the Zionist ethnic cleansing project. During the Nakba, 531 Palestinian towns and villages were destroyed. 15,000 Palestinians were murdered. 800,000 were forcibly driven from their homeland to the West Bank, Gaza Strip, and to neighboring Arab countries, and 70 massacres were committed. Before Israel's declaration of statehood on May 14, 1948, Zionist militias had committed numerous massacres whose histories have largely been suppressed. Baldat Asheikh, on December 31st, in 1947, 70 Palestinians massacred. Sa'sa on February 14th in 1948, 16 houses and their inhabitants blown up. Deir Yassin on April 9th in 1948, 107 were killed, including scores of children, women and elders. Some victims were found maimed, raped and then killed. Masses of men were put on trucks and paraded across Al-Quds before being taken to a quarry to be executed. These atrocities were committed by Irgun and Stern gangs led by Menachem Begin and Yitzhak Shamir, respectively, who would later become prime ministers of the fabricated regime of Israel. And Abu Shusha on May 13th in 1948. Despite efforts of residents to protect their homes, the village fell to occupation. 60 Palestinians massacred. During the 1948 war, Zionist regime forces committed more than 30 documented massacres in Palestine. Israeli regime military historian Yuri Milstein has suggested that there were more than 100. In ensuing years, Israel continued its campaigns of forced displacement and massacres. Notably, it was Gibeah massacre of October 14, 1953, that gave birth to what would become the most powerful pro-Israel lobby in the United States. Born in the blood of the natives of Palestine, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, AIPAC, has spared no efforts to ensure that Israel's ethnic cleansing of the Palestinians be kept hidden from the American people. It is important to know the origins of the Israeli lobby to realize the significant sway it has had on American politics and politicians. For that, we have to go back in time to post-World War II history. Harry S. Truman is president of the United States regime and running for re-election with few prospects and little support until the Israeli lobby literally enters the campaign in the person of Abraham Feinberg, a hosiery manufacturing magnate. And the rest, as they say, is history, Israeli history. The man who made Truman's 1948 election victory possible explained how it was done in an interview conducted in 1973 for the Harry S. Truman Library. Oral history interview with Abraham Feinberg. He stated in the interview that without Truman, Israel would have had very difficult days and times trying to even come into existence. Israel's American enforcers faced challenges during the Eisenhower years from an administration inclined toward a more nuanced policy. During the president's first year in office, news of the massacre in the Palestinian village of Qibya sparked widespread disapproval. Time magazine, for example, carried the story describing how Israeli regime troops shot every man, woman, and child they could find, then turned their fire on the cattle. Reporting also that soldiers were seen slouching in the doorways of Palestinian homes, smoking and joking. 66 people were killed that night. 45 were blown up in their homes that had been dynamited by soldiers. The New York Times ran excerpts from the United Nations Mixed Armistice Commission in charge of the 1949 truce, deploring the act as cold-blooded murder and refuting Israeli lies about the assault. Israel's defenders quickly gathered for damage control. Isaiah L. Kennan, founder of the American Zionist Committee for Public Affairs, AZCPA, the forerunner of AIPAC, wrote of the ill effect it would have on what he called our propaganda. To manage the Qibya fallout and to prepare for future cover-ups, Kennan created AZCPA in 1954. Under his leadership, the group grew stronger and richer when it joined with the new Conference of Presidents of the Major American Jewish Organizations, an association of top Jewish leaders who promoted Israel's interests with U.S. politicians that included presidents and secretaries of state. Influencers like Abraham Feinberg and Kennan were instrumental in selling Israel to Americans and influencing policies favoring Israel. By the time Kennan died in 1988, AIPAC had gained an outsized role in shaping U.S. policy in the West Asia region. Over the years, AIPAC has demonstrated that nothing will diminish its vested interests in Israel, including genocide. Since October 7, 2023, the death and destruction Israel's defenders have been willing to accept are woefully incomprehensible. For example, 26 days into its bombardment of Gaza, the Zionist regime military had dropped 25,000 tons of bombs, American-made bombs, on 12,000 targets, 50 bombs dropped every hour. By that date, Gaza had been bombarded with the equivalent of 2 nuclear bombs over an area smaller than Hiroshima in 1945. The Zionist regime has also used banned cluster and white phosphorus munitions that can cause permanent environmental damage. The pain of that destruction was explicit in the words of 61-year-old Gazan farmer Samu Abi Amir, trying to revive a patch of his own productive ground, saying, "It is as if they wanted to kill the land before they killed us." after dropping more than 85,000 tons of toxic bombs on the small enclave for 15 months, it is obvious that Israel intended to poison the soil to make Gaza uninhabitable for survivors. A November 2024 report published by the Environmental Quality Authority, an independent agency established in the 1990s by the Palestinian Authority, concluded that as a result of the bombing, the soil of Gaza has become so polluted with toxic chemicals that it will hinder agriculture for decades. Unable to defeat the Palestinian resistance with bombs and lethal ground forces, the Tel Aviv regime has reimposed a total blockade once again on Gaza, returning to its October 2023 weapon of war, starvation and deprivation. In addition to halting humanitarian aid, the Zionist regime threatened the resistance with additional consequences if they refuse to extend phase one of the January ceasefire agreement and accept its new proposal. It is clear that the Zionist regime has no intention of putting an end to this human catastrophe that has been in the making for over 80 years. There will be no resolution until Palestinians recapture their land, Palestine.
Thank you.